Hello, hello, hello. I am Kenzie Tartaglione. You may recognize me since I'm always chatting in your ear if you're listening to Queer PG. This is another episode of New Game Showcase, but I am flying solo this time. If you remember our Daggerheart episode, not the actual play, but where I went through the character creation playtest, this is going to be a little bit more like that. And if you've had a second to listen to our past couple of Press Pause episodes, you would have noticed that we have been sponsored by Publishing Goblin. Shout out, thank you so much to them. In lieu of their upcoming backer kit campaign for their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive. This backer kit goes live next Tuesday, October 15th, and in preparation, I want to take a moment to share this game with you. I have had the pleasure of being able to go through a bunch of game materials. A bunch! I've got documents out the wazoo. I have been living my best nerd life in the past couple of weeks delving in. We've got to start at the top. What is Confluence RPG? Confluence is a genre-blending TTRPG of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror built to tell character and place-driven story. That last bit is super important, and we will get to it. Place-driven. In the rich setting of Ajuria, strange phenomena called confluxes bring together people of many worlds from across space and time. Also important, we will get into it. Here is my big, kind of random initial takeaway from this game. It fixes the multiverse problems. I don't think they did that one on purpose. I don't think it was a goal, but it fixes it. I love multiverse stuff when it's done right, which it rarely ever is. I love this idea that we live in a world amongst worlds and simultaneous lives are being lived side by side, yet with a world between. Ajuria is not infinite, but there are tendencies for things to be pooled, capital P there, pooled to Ajuria. Sometimes people, buildings, concepts, weather. I could start a game in Confluence, and if I so choose, pull in my favorite elements from other fictions. You look down this street and see the bookshop from Good Omens? Oh, Mixie Mayer from down the street is a writer greatly influenced by Richard Sykin? I mean, sad boy, but yeah, if I want them to be, so be it. I don't know, maybe you'll play a game and Hakubayani from The Lastings and Ufkith and Penn shows up. I'm just saying you could do that. The world is built for that. Things are pushed and pulled from Ajuria all the time, making for limitless possibilities. The world building in Confluence RPG is a collaborative effort between the story leader and the players, but get this, also between gaming groups. Yes, you heard that right. Publishing Goblin is working on creating a public focus card database that can be accessed and edited by anyone around the in real life world. I think that's super cool. If you're not like me, then easy peasy, you don't have to use the thing. Just saying that now. Your game can be your game with no outside influence if that is what you want. But I think it's really cool to see how other people's inventions have the capacity to alter the world you are playing in. Now that you've heard the overview, let's get into some of the game materials. I have 5 things to chat about. One is calibration, which is all about session zero. One is the Confluence Guide to the Living Archive, which is a guide for both the players and the story leaders, which, if you haven't assumed, are what game masters are called in this game. Then we've got the Catalog of Lists, which is pretty much exactly what it sounds like, a bunch of lists, and it includes a bunch of specifics about characters and the like, and what you need to choose the things for through the character creation stuff. That's that. I think I'm going to pronounce this wrong. It's like the only thing I don't have a phonetic spelling for in all of this stuff. Sujatha's or Sujatha's journal is a setting companion with a lot more information about the peoples and the history of the world. We're not going to get into that one that deeply because it's written kind of like a historical scientific book. And then, possibly my favorite thing because I love a good campaign setting, is the Atlas. But let's start off at the beginning. So calibration is a walkthrough for a session zero, but a session zero specifically geared toward the game of Confluence. Everybody should be doing session zeros before they play the game. As someone who runs a podcast, our main seasons consist of about 5 session zeros. Because at the end of the day, this session is not just to work out safety tools, which are very important for a successful table, but session zeros are also part of the world building. Using calibration, which is big on collaborative gameplay and world building, the players and the story leader come together to decide on what type of story they are going to tell. This makes sure that there is a shared understanding of the game, it provides checks and balances to be used as you play and progress, and calibration can be used throughout your campaign. You can check in with it before and after every session, or whenever a big story jump is happening. It's not a one-and-done deal. A big note for calibration is choosing themes and palettes. These are often determined by the location you are choosing to start your game in. The Atlas provides these options for each area, but that is just a jumping-off point. You are allowed to mix and match and create your own for whatever would best fit your story. Character creation is also done together in this part of the game. That doesn't mean you can't have secrets, but building connections to your fellow PCs and, just importantly, to the world of Egeria together will help create community at the table and between the characters. There is a full group sheet about group ideation with specific questions to help this process, like, what is the group's core concept? What connects them? How did you meet? What important moments have you already shared? Where does the start of the story find you all? What are your goals? How do you work together as a team? Yada, yada, yada. All that good stuff. And you may say, well, that's all good and dandy. I do that for all my tables. To which I say, incredible. Love to hear it. But what if we take all those choices and make them mechanic? Group bonds define the relationship between your characters through a shorthand. For example, if you decided that your characters have all known each other for a while, they are a bunch of swords people who went through the same training, then you could choose to have the group bond trained together. These bonds can also be between specific characters. They are mechanics you decide on communally that could offer you boosts to roles when you begin to play. We'll get into more character building mechanics when we get to going through all that stuff, but you also have group traits, which can include a calling, facet, or specialty to use together, and these are kind of your mechanics, what you use to roll dice during this game. Or a group trait could be a hideout you share, or a skill such as a secret language, or a feeling of when another one of your group is in trouble. One of my favorite parts about the creation in this game is how you are able to take the narrative ideas you all come up with and work them in a way that give mechanical advantages in the future. Focuses are one of the biggest parts of the game. They are your most basic story element. They can be an NPC, location, important event, interesting item, or a common goal. And during calibration, the players and story leader work together to create focuses based on the varied connections that came about in the earlier character development. One of the big things in this game is taking the pressure off of the story leader to be the single and sole creator of every aspect of the world. The player should have as much influence as they want in making decisions. You're the one who grew up in Crop Circle Junction. You tell me who your local barista is. If you need any sort of help on where to begin building your group in Confluence, Calibration is the in-depth guide to how to run Session Zero, whether that is a one-time step for you or a continuous process throughout your game. The Atlas is incredibly beautiful, and I don't need to go through the entire setting guide because that would be monotonous since you cannot see what I am seeing right now, but it's written like a book that has passed through many different hands. There's a ton of ephemera to be found in the bulletins, the paper clippings, the wanted ads, etc. And I specifically want to shout out Brad on page, 10-ish, the extreme sports athlete of Team Extreme. I also want to know what happens if you run up the falls, so please reach out if you ever find out. Currently, the Atlas is of the Motley Coast. It is a single part of Egeria, but it contains a quite frankly insane amount of information. And I just know that that is not it. I know the Confluence team has a world of locations out there just waiting to be released at some point in the future, and I cannot wait to get my little grubby hands on them. But the coast, for now, is already an incredibly diverse and interesting place to begin. You've got gravity shifting in the swirling sea. Kind of my favorite location so far are the Gravity Isles. We've got Delrun, a swashbuckling town full of pirates. It's a very, very colorful world where a session can simply be a community festival around a big bowl of soup. But don't let that fool you. There is political intrigue in darker depths you can explore if you so choose. There is union activity in Crop Circle Junction, where there is only one day a year that work comes to a halt. There is science galore at Project C-1019, where innovation in technology gets its start. A lot of the information in the Atlas clearly pulls from a greater and wider world that we simply don't have access to yet. I think one of the biggest noticeable things within the Atlas is how important community and culture is, and respecting those cultures. Because things are being pushed and pulled all the time, Ajuria is almost entirely diaspora. It is a true melting pot of people who bring something from home that enriches their lives and the lives of those around them. Sujatha's journal is the next document, which I mentioned before, we're not going to go too deep into because it's written in like a historical timeline about Ajuria and its people. It's super interesting. It grants more information on the different eras that Ajuria has been through, on specific complexes, which are things that were pulled into this world and when they were pulled into the world. It gives a rundown of the different languages you may find, as well as the anomalous abilities, which I think for our means is what I want to go through because it will add to your ideas when you are creating your characters. First off, there's chroma, which is interaction with sensing and the manipulation of sensation, emotion, and feeling with a visible component of colorful lights. This is an inherent ability for all Hyan, one of the many lineages you have the choice of playing, and was dampened when it was pulled into Ajuria. Since it's pulling, though, it can be learned by anyone willing to learn with intentional practice. This is true of many things in Ajuria. Even if someone is not from the place something originated, because it now exists within Ajuria, it is able to be learned. There is divinity, which is not owned by the gods, but is a power that anyone can harness if they find an anchor. Divinity is a fabric of the universe. The vessels of divinity have a domain. Worship and support reifies their power. There are good and bad uses of this, of course, but this goes for anyone. If you lose your connection to divinity, you lose your life. Exosuits are a prosthesis and a fantastical technology used by Chell, another lineage. It connects directly to the brain. For non-Chells, there are adapters that do that for it. And the Chell uses the suits as mobility aids, but they do need electricity to work. So within the realm of your campaign, one of the cool aspects is figuring out how you want to have these anomalous powers come to fruition. Grotto is a reality bending originating from the Faething, another lineage, and can be learned by anyone who truly believes in it. Jelly-blooded beings can form symbiotic relationships with fungi, plant life, or other creatures. This is a natural ability from goblins, but as I said before, anyone can become a jelly-blooded with biotech advancements. Smoke is an anomalous ability that originally helped Alphira navigate cave systems, but has shifted to be used in smoking, literal like hookah, cigars, fireworks, and spa treatments. Intensomancy, which I feel like is the biggest, or maybe it's just the biggest within my favorite parts of the world so far, but it is a unique ability to the Motley Coast, and specifically, as I mentioned before, my favorite place being the Gravity Isles, it is specific to the Gravity Isles. It is the manipulation of gravity through mental and physical manipulation. I'm kind of obsessed with this concept, to be perfectly honest, especially the bit about it being used for sport. Is my first character going to be a jock? Never in my life has my character been a jock. I guess we all get to try new things. The next big portion of materials is the Confluence Guide, which explains to you how to play the game. There is a part for players and a part for story leaders that goes in depth into the mechanics and how to tell a story using this game. Confluence is a D6 system. In general, there are two different kinds of rolls. A quick roll, which is a 1d6 roll to test your luck, and a scene roll, which happens when there is a point of narrative uncertainty. A player will create a pool of dice to roll against the story leader's difficulty pool. But the story leader also has the ability to use specific moves. So the players can use their facets and specialty mechanics, And the story leader can use ephemera moves and conflux moves that can change the action that's happening in the moment. As I said, there is a whole story leader guide to help you smoothly run a game of Confluence that is quite in-depth and useful for both new game masters and old ones alike. There is a mechanic, though, that I want to talk about. I'm not going to go as in-depth as the Confluence guide does, but wounds. I love Powered by the Apocalypse, and I love the harm system in that. I really like the scars and marks in Candela Obscura. That's probably my favorite mechanic in that game. And wounds in this game feel to me, at least, as if they're bringing those two concepts together. Wounds are narrative-driven and should be a mechanism for development, which is how I prefer to use them in storytelling anyhow. It's one of my least favorite things about the damage and healing in D&D. Like, what if I wanted this to be a beat, have a scar or some trauma of it? But in that game, all the vestiges of the damage ever happening disappears with the casting of Cure Wounds. In a high combat game, that makes sense, because otherwise people would be dead every other day. But I've just found that I'm looking for something a bit deeper. So like most things in this game, wounds start out narratively, and then there is a mechanical repercussion to the wound. The player and the story leader work together to figure out how a specific wound would affect gameplay, whether it's something as obvious as a mechanic shift or something more lasting like adding a negative association to the palette or shifting a theme. Maybe during a roll, it causes you to get another wound. Wounds can also be connected to attributes, facets, specialties, or even a focus. They don't necessarily have to be physical, they could be mental, and they don't necessarily have to be to your person. For instance, a focus with a wound could be a favorite restaurant that was damaged by some action you took. Clearing wounds should also be narrative, and that can look like any number of things, whether it's getting patched up, having a heart-to-heart, but clearing a wound also doesn't mean that your character has forgotten about it or is fully healed from it. There could be residual trauma, or there could just simply be the remembering of this moment in time. Wounds can also lead to incapacitation or death. This game is not void of those possibilities, however bright and colorful it looks on the outside. But like with any game, that is a communal decision that you should talk about in calibration. You gotta talk about that. Please do not just go into a high possibility of death game without alerting your players to that being the possibility. Now, everybody is concerned with, when do I get more stuff? How do I level up? Progression is how your character is shaped and shapes the world. It is a form of leveling up that's not actually about leveling up. It's about shifting your character sheet, attributes, facets, specialties as your character grows. Some things may need to be added, deleted, or rewarded to make more sense with where you are at that moment in time. When important growth happens in the game, you can gain a lesson, but you can also actively seek those lessons out as you play. And mechanically, it takes 3 lessons to progress a facet. Focuses will shift as the group interacts with them, and focuses can be changed by what the players and characters know about them. There is a section on advanced progression, so if you've played a long enough campaign and you have filled your specialist and facet slots, you can alter them or replace them, or you can choose to retire characters that have become fully developed. Whatever that means to you, it can look different to every player. But this system is a lot more about growth and learning and developing a character rather than it is about gaining powers or making the highest rolls possible. There is very little that adds to rolls in games. So you can like use a token to add a die to a roll. If somebody's helping you, you can add a die to a roll. You have mechanics that add a die to a roll, but you're never getting to a point where you're like, oh, well, now I'm rolling with 6 die. No, you're always going to be rolling with like 3 dice. This episode of Queer PG is brought to you by Publishing Goblin and their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive. Confluence is a genre-bending game of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, built to tell character-driven stories. Explore the beautiful and original setting of Ajuria, where phenomena called confluxes bring people together, space and time be damned. Use magic alongside technology to cook your favorite meals, rebel against corrupt power systems, explore sites long forgotten, and create colorful characters and companions for your next journey. Confluence is an original D6 dice pool engine with fully customizable character creation that drives and changes with the narrative you tell. The story leader guides the players with the help of the Atlases, a setting guide full of in-universe documents and stories to uncover, to fully immerse the table in the mystical, whimsical, and colorful world of Ajuria. With a team of almost 100% queer folks, a Confluence RPG and a queerPG partnership seemed inevitable, and we are very excited about watching this game come to life. Confluence RPG, coming to BackerKit October 15th.
The mists roll across the valley, over the bodies of hundreds of dead, as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal.
Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
I mean, we're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
Okay, it's time. Let's get into it. I've already mentioned the jock character. I think I might have to do it. I'm always the brains. I know why. We don't have to talk about it. I just am that player. Got high intelligence, smart brains, whatever the mechanic is, at all times. Let's break that mold. So first off, in character creation, is the concept. Jock. We got that. You know, maybe we take after Brad a bit, my favorite little mention from early on in the Atlas. Not the name, I'm not going to be called Brad, but since my favorite place is the Gravity Isles, that's where we're going to be from. I'm on an Eye of the Cauldron team, which is a sport in the world with three teams of three people who try to win points by hitting a ball into a floating cauldron. Sounds fun to me. Next up, we got to pick a lineage. I'm going to go through them. Don't you worry. Sujatha's journal has a lot of biological stuff, super interesting stuff about the lineages, but I'm not really concerned with the capacity for reproduction right now as I am about the vibes. So we're just going to go through the vibes and, you know, general physicalities. First up is Alphira, which are short. Average height is 3'6". Furry mice-like people with exceptional senses. One of my favorite lineages. I am basing that off of the fact that I think the art is cute. We've got Chell, an insectoid cloned people specialized towards the maintenance of and integration with biomechanics machinery. They can form a symbiotic relationship with rust wraiths. That's a tongue twister. They got these like little friends inside their bodies. The one I'm most interested in general, not for our purposes today, but in general, is the fallen gods. They carry a small spark of divine power, all that remains after falling from their full godhood. It reeks of tragedy, and I'm in it. Jernong are strong humanoids with rabbit-like face and ears, sharp teeth, and amphibious features. They start shark-like and then grow to walk on land. They still like water, though, and are always a little wet. They have tails that help navigate and whiskers that detect changes in weather. Mortal is a human-like people descended from immortal servitors who were created by the gods to attend them. Oh my god. Okay, what about the drama of a mortal and fallen god couple? The mortal was once the attendant of the god, and then the god fell from godhood, and now they are in love. Moving on. Salian is a semi-aquatic salamander-like people. Their art is very cute. I wish I could show it to you right now.
They look really cute.
Faething are mask-wearing people of opulent theatrics and artistic extremes who search for sensations, meaning, and self. This feels like it definitely takes inspiration from mask theater like Commedia dell'arte and No Theater. I'm assuming that's inspiration for it. I don't know. I'm making that up. I'm putting that on that. There's a lot of history in that, and I think that's really cool. Faething live a very short amount of time at 20 years, and they don't eat or sleep. They have jet black eyes and their bodies have a doll-like quality that allows them to make modifications. They can adapt their body like the Djen, which is another lineage that we'll get to. Goblins are jelly-blooded humanoids who live symbiotic lives with a diverse array of moss, molds, and fungus. You know, I kind of like this because sure, the name goblin is something we all know from a bunch of different fantasy things. I don't know if I've ever heard goblins described in this way. I think it's new, I think it's interesting, and I think it breaks a mold that really needed to be broken. Hyan are beings formed from color, hailing from a world of sentient thought in the form of light. What a philosophy that could start a cult. We talked about chroma earlier, and these are the people who use that innately. Oh, here's a fun fact. They aren't put together like humans. They use an unusual form of covalent bonding, so there are gaps between their limbs that float a little bit away from their bodies. That is dope. Bande Daben are bipedal anthropomorphic people of fur, scale, skin, and claw. This to me feels like if you're looking for a cat folk, rabbit folk, dog folk, etc., that sort of thing, this would be where you'd want to fall. It's a very diverse lineage derived from any animal, even mythological, that you may know of on Earth. Djen are highly adaptable people that molt into different forms throughout their lives. Molting is involved, husks are involved, giving shape changer vibes without a size limit. And if you're like, well, you know, there's got to be some limits, no, there don't. Because lineages are not what offer any mechanical value, capital G-O-O-D, by the way. It most likely doesn't matter at all if there are limits or not, because it's not going to change a single thing about how your character works, outside of how you function narratively. There is no mechanical advantages or disadvantages for any lineage that you choose. Wen are slow-moving fungal creatures covered in plant growth with incredibly long lifespans. They do speak and think, but slowly, and they want to preserve nature above all. Mirren are amphibious, eel-like people with small black eyes and two long arms that lay flat against their sides as they swim. These are some big fish, guys. They could be 5 to 8 feet long. They can live to be 300 years old. They can slither on land, but they do need water, and they can talk. They have a language. Unlelo are winged bat people who can have a wingspan of 9 feet, which I'm not going to think about because then I just think about real life bats being that big, and that's terrifying. If there are real life bats that big, do not tell me. Okay, so while I said I would want to play a fallen god, I don't have a concept for a fallen god that is a jock, so I'm not going to choose that this time. Instead, I'm going to choose the Bande Deben. I feel like I want it to be bear-like and specifically panda-like in coloring. Their day job is jock, like a Ken doll. Their passion is Eye of the Cauldron, the game, but specifically they are deep in the practice of tensormancy to up their game. If their goal in life is anything, it's to get to Brad's level. Not necessarily be better than Brad, because they do very different things. Extreme sports and Eye of the Cauldron, very different. But they want to reach that level, Brad level of notoriety. Now we got to get attributes. Calibration comes with an example on how to construct them, so I'm going to use that for our purposes. There are 4 attributes: form, personality, culture, calling. You'll start with 1 to 4 in total. Since I'm from the Gravity Isles, themes include turbulent tides, either rags or riches, crime drama, mystery cults, past its glory days, and palette words are notable, twisting, hazarding, shifting, adaptable, kindness, and harmony. You can use those to help you choose your attributes. The point of character creation in this world, as I mentioned briefly before, is that things are place-driven here. You want to be grounded in the world. You want to feel like you are from this place that you come from. I am going to do 1 attribute for each of those categories. So for form, I am big, wide, and dense with fur. For personality, I pride myself on my dedication and determination. For culture, I believe in my teammates and their belief in me. And for calling, I'm called to be the greatest Eye of the Cauldron player ever known. I got big hopes for... what should their name be? I'm not going to actually steal from Brad and be Brad. I don't want my panda guy to be Brad. Their name is Doyle, and we're going to use he, they pronouns for Doyle. I'm kind of in love with him already. Big panda bear named Doyle. Next up is choosing facets and specialties. You can have up to 3 facets and 5 specialties. Now, the catalog of lists holds a lot of stuff in it. We have a list of facets to choose from, as well as a list of specialties and specific callings. Just remember that when you're in character creation, you will be able to make your own if you don't see anything that seems to fit. The callings have specific facets and specialties that are recommended with them, but there aren't any callings that fit Doyle, so we're going to work from scratch with the facets and specialties. Not from scratch, I'm not making my own, I just meant we're going to work from the list. We already know that tensormancy is part of Doyle's life, so we're going to skip down to that one. One thing about tensormancy is that it can only be learned at the Gravity Isles. So it's a good thing Doyle lives there. There is always an awakened moment with tensormancy, and I think that Doyle's was that at one point during an Eye of the Cauldron game, he felt the gravity well in his brain and was able to lift not only himself, but his other 2 teammates up, using the cauldron as an anchor and hiking up over the other team, passed the ball, and scored the winning point. It was a pretty great moment in his life. It got written up in the newspaper. Tensormancers have a meter of control to endure the mental and physical strain of the effects of tensormancy. So I have a 4, and depending on what you do, you use that up. If you run out, your anchors are broken and you take a wound. My tensormancy specialty is going to be... actually, I'm going to pick 2, I think. The first one is enhanced control, so my control meter goes up by 1. And then projectile manipulation, because I want to be able to take that errant cauldron ball and shift it to the goal. Taking this one means I have to take the marksmanship facet, so that will be my 2nd facet. Of course, usually this focuses on ranged weapons. Doyle is focused on that cauldron ball, baby! I don't think I'm going to take any specialties from this because it's really not about firing weapons to Doyle. I'm going to take the leadership facet last because Doyle is team captain. Your character has a knack for bringing out the best in those around them. There's a bunch of actions you can take which you would roll 1d6 for. On a 6, your allies are inspired. On a 4-5, only PCs are inspired. On a 2-3, 1 ally is inspired and 1 enemy is inspired. and on a 1, you miss the mark, you take a wound, or all enemies are inspired. I'm going to take the fiery speech specialty. In the heat of the moment when plans are falling apart, you can hold them together through charisma alone. You grant 2 dice to characters instead of 1 when they roll with a token. Yes, we didn't talk about tokens, but there are tokens in this game. There are different ways to get them, and you can use them to add to dice rolls. If I talked about all the mechanics, we would be here for forever, and we've already been here for, quite frankly, a long time. I also want to take tactician, which is a specialty of the leadership. When another player is using a facet and is having a hard time or failing, you can give them a bonus by helping them see a new way through or a new way to use their skills. Add 2 to a dice roll or give your ally a token. All right, and with that, Doyle's done. I'm a little obsessed with him. I'm not sure he would work in any campaign that wasn't slice of life, but that's okay. Sometimes those are the exact types of games you need. There is really a ton of pre-made facets and specialties in this catalog, and that's what I took from, but you can make all of them out for yourself. Just remember that any facet or specialty you make should have a grounding in the world of Confluence. And it's not out for use right now, but the Confluence team is working on a zine called So You Want to Build It, where they are literally providing you with a step-to-step guide on how to build your own mechanics. They want you to do it. So, if you feel the urge, do it! Okay. Doyle's gonna be in my mind forever, but I want to end this rundown and review of Confluence with my biggest takeaway. Since we started it with my initial thought, my biggest initial thought, gotta end it with my biggest takeaway. There is a choose what mechanics you want to use aspect of this game that makes it really feel like a make your own type of game. With the pulling and pushing of actual elements of the world at your fingertips at all times, it shouldn't surprise anyone that the game works just as well if you choose to bring in your favorite tarot cards, or take 1 from 10 candles and burn candles to represent actual passage of time. Even though this game is narrative-driven, if you work better in an XP system, well, bring that on over to trigger prompts or gain lessons. Anything that would make your gaming experience better playing Confluence is how you should be playing Confluence. I need a set of rules to play a game. I can just improv with my friends all day if I want. But to me, the point of TTRPGs is to tell a story with the confines of luck and chance brought about by a set of rules. 1-pages that have 2 rules to them, while they can be fun, tend to stress me out a lot. Super crunch games where the rules suppress the narrative? Can't be bothered with. This game balances narrative and mechanics in a way that I innately understand. It's how I try to balance most of my games, but it feels really good when the game itself isn't actively fighting my instincts, but working along with them. I talked at you a lot, and I hope some of it stuck. I hope that my excitement about this game was felt. The Confluence team is already giving so much to work with, and I know there is just so much more to come. Next Tuesday, go to BackerKit and back this game. Better yet, go right now and pre-save it. The world in this game is quite literally your oyster. And if you haven't heard already, one of the stretch goals for the Confluence crowdfunding campaign is an actual play made by us. They are going to have us produce a Confluence RPG actual play with a great story and a dope cast. And we're super excited for it, but can't do it unless you go over there and support. Confluence, the living archive. Do what you know you should do.